Chapter 22. Pregnancy termination was what the clinic lady called it. During our 10-minute conversation, she gave me the details, 4 hours from start to finish, a counselor assigned to me throughout the procedure, $175. Answering her questions, I heard my voice go higher and thinner until it sounded like the high-pitched whine of a mosquito. The woman didn't seem to notice. "So we'll see you on Saturday afternoon at 1, she said. Positive the baby was a girl, I couldn't help naming her. And naming her made her real. My alternate plan was to tell Dante I'd miscarried, then go off somewhere, have Vita Marie, and sign the adoption papers. I could make the story foolproof. Telling lies to Dante was what I did best. But the world was full of terrible parents. I saw them at Grand Union all the time, hitting their children on the head, calling them idiots while you stood by in silence, ringing up their bad nutrition. Besides, I was scared to tamper with a 9 or 10 month absence. Raffaella might slip back in through the opening I made. Anyone might. Maybe Dante would love Vita Marie once he saw her, I thought. Maybe he was only opposed to babies in theory. Maybe subconsciously he wanted to be a father. What if the world didn't blow itself up in 10 years? But what if he didn't love her? What if her birth caused me to lose him? Child-free, he called marriages without babies. You'll be in your 9th week by Saturday, the clinic woman said. We don't like to aspirate much after the 10th. It gets complicated. The process we'll use detaches the fetal tissue from the uterine wall by vacuum suction. It passes out of your body through a flexible tube. You're being inflexible, Dante insisted when I told him I really didn't think I could have the abortion. This is the 1970s, not the Dark Ages. Women have fought long and hard for you to exercise this option. Go back and read that precious book of yours. I did. But I avoided the chapter on abortion and stuck to the ones on childbearing and parenting instead. I checked out other books on pregnancy, too, but hid them from Dante in the hamper with the unopened bottle of cold duck. If I hadn't put off that call to the clinic, if I'd acted right away, she would have only been an anonymous little ball of tissue, no larger than a pearl. She'd been pearl-sized the day I bought my blue and silver dress and twirled for those 2 sales ladies. If I drove to Burlington and asked them what I should do, I thought, they'd tell me to keep her. Vita Marie was 9 weeks old now, a 1-inch baby floating in fluid with fingers and eye bumps, but no detectable heartbeat. I wrote my grandmother to tell her we couldn't drive down for Christmas after all. But I miss you, Grandma. I really want to see you. The line filled up with truth as I wrote it, and I had to stop and cry. I made the appointment, I told Dante that night. I'm having it done the day after Christmas. He had stir-fried our supper, bok choy, tofu, and pea pods. Rather than eating, I was separating ingredients back into categories with my fork, the kind of behavior Dr. Shaw called passive-aggressive. Dante deserved it. And more, I figured. Baby killer, I thought silently, watching him eat. Nick called me today. Wanted to get away, go skiing that weekend. But that's okay. It was tentative. I'll call and tell him I can't. Go, I told him. I should be there with you. I should help you through it. I don't want you there. I'd rather be alone that weekend. He reached across the table and took my hand. You're doing the right thing, he said. Yeah? Tell her that. Who? I kept him waiting. Nobody, I finally said. In my dream that night, Dante helped me deliver her in the back seat of a car. He cut the cord with rusty scissors as strangers looked in, their faces pushed flat against the car windows. Vita Marie was a talking little blonde girl. I loved her immediately, but even in my dream, love only got me so far. Before my eyes, she shrank and crusted over until she was a maple sugar candy. "Eat her," Dante urged. I did. But when I woke and snapped on the nightlight, he looked handsome and gentle in his sleep. He'd asked about birth control that very first night, made his position clear from the start, no matter what kind of villain I was trying to turn him into. It was my lies that got me into this mess, not Dante. But I wouldn't even be here without lies. If I wasn't a disillusioned watercolor artist with a Farrah Fawcett hairstyle, then I was myself, Dolores, the person everyone left. I got out of bed in paste. Back in my apartment, I made two lists. What I love about Dante. Number one, his hands. Number two, his voice. Number three, sex. Number four, his dedication to his work. Number five, he loves me back. Number six, he made me someone new. What I would love about Vita Marie? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Seeing it in black pen on a legal pad made it clear. I couldn't leave him, not even for her. As long as he loved me, I was my new self. Cinderella, Farrah, living with a guy a whole gym full of girls wanted to dance with. I had a job, monthly bills, a normal sex life. I was weak at the knees with love. I was weak. Our bodies, ourselves, said some women found it helpful to bring a friend along for support. "Hello, Tandy," I said. "This is Dolores from work." "Oh, hi." I heard her exhale her cigarette smoke. "You're not busy, are you?" "If this is about switching shifts, I can't." "It's not. I was wondering if I could talk to you."
"About what?"
"Oh, nothing special. Maybe we could go shopping or something."
"Where?"
"I don't care. Burlington? It's just, well, it's always so hectic down at the store, you know. I just thought it would be fun to get together and talk. I bet you and I have a lot in common."
"I'm eating lunch," she said.
"Oh, I'll let you go then. See you at work."
"Yep."
The morning after Christmas, Dante loaded up the Volkswagen and tied his skis to the roof. The day before had been quiet, endless. My presents from him were a pair of cloisonné earrings, a 3-inch porcelain whale, and a new love poem he had written. I had meant to get him 1,000 wonderful gifts, but in the midst of all the confusion and resentment, I'd managed only one, a downfield ski parka, red as blood. It seemed to inflate as he took it out of the box and unfolded it. "I'm sorry," I said.
"What are you sorry for? It's great. Are you kidding me? Look, I can still cancel out. Stay here."
I shook my head. "Don't call me either. I don't want to have to think about when the phone is going to ring."
"All right," he said.
"I'll be home Monday, then. Early evening, probably, depending on traffic and weather. If you change your mind or have any doubts about it or anything, then you should call me," I said. "Don't not call if you think you might want the baby after all."
"Look," he said, "you're not thinking too clearly right now. You have to trust me. We're doing the right thing. It's nobody's fault it happened. But it would be immoral to give a life to a random mistake just because..."
"Okay, okay," I said. "You don't need to say all this again." He pulled me over to him.
"Hey, you know what I've been thinking? That we should get married somewhere on the coast." Maine, maybe. How does this summer sound? June, maybe? Or early July? I watched his chin move up and down with the words.
I don't know, I said. I don't know anything right now.
Chadley had flown to Florida to spend Christmas with his daughter's family. All day long, I lay in bed listening to Mrs. Wing's footsteps above my head. I knew that if I thought about it long enough, I wouldn't do it. Her near baldness scared me. I'd never seen her without her black wig. I was just about to have a cup of Earl Grey, dear. Come in and join me. We drank the tea out on her sun porch. In the late afternoon light, her scalp shone through the white frizzy hair, pink as the inside of a seashell. Mrs. Wing, I said. She waited for my tears to stop, covering my hands with her hands. Mrs. Wing squeezed my hand in the waiting room, too. We were the only ones there. I thought I was pregnant once, she said. I stared down into my chrome chair arm, watching my warped reflection as she spoke. But it turned out to be a false alarm. Mr. Wing always wore a prophylactic. He was meticulous about it. Of course, back then you didn't dare tell people you didn't want children. Everyone just assumed you tried and failed. The counselor assigned to me wore her hair in a bouncing ponytail. It might be better if you wait out here, she told Mrs. Wing, but I'll take good care of her for you. The doctor was the woman whose taped voice I'd listened to, the one who'd said not using birth control was a decision to have a baby. I looked at her big chapped hands as she spoke, not at her face. She told me it was best to have her explain the procedure as it was happening, that it took away fear of the unknown. Any questions before we start? No, I said. I hate myself for doing this. Do you feel you're not ready to continue?
I'm ready to continue. I just wanted you to know I love her very much, even though I'm doing this to her. She just looked at me.
Go ahead, I said. I'm ready.
I am.
I'm going to insert the speculum now. Would you like to see what it looks like first? I shook my head.
Questions?
Will it hurt? You shouldn't feel any pain, but there'll be some pressure, the counselor told me. Her eyes looked sympathetic, but when she wrapped her hands around my fists, they felt as cold as the equipment. I'm going to anesthetize your cervix with Novocaine now, the doctor said. I pictured myself screaming and wailing, halting the procedure. But I just lay, my emotions mislaid, and let it happen. I saw Dante high up on his mountain, his shiny red parka against white snow, blue sky. Once, in bed after we'd made love, he told me what he got out of skiing. Pure, distilled silence, he'd said, except for the hushing sound of your skis. Then he touched my arm and made the sound. I was up on that slope, watching him fall and unfall through the snow, enjoying the hush. Carol has started the aspiration now. This should take about 5 minutes. It hummed louder than I wanted it to. It drowned out Dante's skiing. My body itself felt nothing, not even the pressure they'd promised. Whales made good mothers, I had read. Their babies came out tail first, and the mothers nudged them up to the surface for air. They carried stillborns around on their backs until they dissolved back into the ocean. I couldn't tell if I was dreaming or resting. I saw my whale's big dead eye close up on the day I'd swum down to it. What did the clinic do with the tissue that went up the tube? Where did Vita Marie end up?
How are you doing? The counselor asked. You feeling strong enough to sit up and rejoin the world?
The doctor wrote me 2 prescriptions. One for birth control pills. The other for tetracycline to prevent infection. I sat out in Mrs. Wing's lavender Cadillac while she had them filled, pressing down on the gray leather upholstery to get through each cramp. This is as hard as life gets, I told myself. And you're living through it. A man walked by, wheeling a baby in a stroller. I slumped down in the seat, hid my face from him, and took the next spasm. When she got back in the car, Mrs. Wing handed me the bag. Inside were the pills and a present, too, a bag of licorice whips. I put one of the ropes in my mouth and chewed, amazed at how good something could taste in the midst of life's being this bad. I chewed and chewed, swallowing back my own sweet licoricey saliva, unable to turn off the undeserved taste. He got in on schedule at 7 o'clock on Monday night, so windburned and healthy-looking that eye contact was impossible. He dropped his soft luggage in the middle of the floor, sat down on the bed, and hugged me tight for over a minute. I hated him.
How did you make out? He said finally.
All right.
Did you have it?
Have what? Say it.
Did you?
Say it.
The abortion.
Yes. He took my chin in his hand and turned my head so that I'd look at him.
I'm in mourning too, you know, he told me.
But later he forgot himself, whistling as he unpacked. We spent New Year's Day napping and playing Scrabble. Dante made us a vegetable broth and sourdough bread, and got the dirty clothes ready for the laundromat.
What's this? He said.
He was holding up the cold duck. We drank it from the bottle while we sat out in the car, watching our clothes tumble inside. Over the sound of the heater and defrost, the radio counted down the year's top songs.
Hey, home ec, Dante said. Happy 1977.
Yeah, I said. You too. He took another swig of wine.
Do you know what I was just thinking?
What?
That we shouldn't wait. That we should get married as soon as possible. What do you think?
Why do you call me that, Dante? I said.
Call you what?
Home ec. He shrugged.
I don't know, just to tease you. Why?
Is that what you and me are all about?
Meaning?
Me scrubbing your toilet for you? Me keeping you in clean sheets? He sighed and took another swig. And another. I went inside to fold the clothes. When I got back out, the radio was playing Rod Stewart, number one for the past year.
Spread your wings and let me come inside.
Dante had finished the bottle.
Love is what you and I are all about, Dante said.
That was the answer I'd wanted from him, been fishing for. All the way home, I sat and tried to figure out why it wasn't enough. We set the date for George Washington's birthday and booked a justice of the peace and the back room at the Lobster Pot restaurant downtown. Paula from the high school dance said sure, she and Boomer would be thrilled to stand up for us. She'd even throw in Heather as flower girl. I decided to wear my blue and silver dress and ordered a corsage of yellow roses to cover up that punch stain. I spent January preparing for the wedding and trying to convince myself I had done the right thing. Sometimes, on the worst days, the call-in sick ones, I let myself pretend that Vida Marie was invincible, that she'd somehow tricked all of us and existed still inside of me,
An overwhelming pregnant woman's fatigue took me over, resided in me. Sometimes on my 15-minute break at work, I'd fall asleep on the plastic sofa with a lit Marit between my fingers. I'd gone back to smoking, but only at work. Walking the hill back home required an effort so total that I'd flop down on the daybed, not waking up until I heard Dante in the kitchen rattling the pots and pans in a huff, making the supper I'd promised to make. "You're smoking again," he said one night in bed. "Aren't you?" "I had one cigarette at work today." "Well, your hair stinks of it. It's a turnoff." Which was just as well. I'd managed to avoid sex since the abortion, except for once. That time his penis had felt like a vacuum cleaner up inside me, looking to suck out life. "I'm not ready for this," I'd told him. He said he understood and was willing to be patient, that he would pour all his passion into his poetry and wait for a signal from me. But a few days later, he got his first literary magazine rejection slip for Love/Us, and started slamming things around the apartment and shaking his head at me. "Here we lie," he said that night in bed. "Monsignor Frustration and Sister Mary Chastity, America's most abnormal fiancés." But Dante indulged me in his own way, buying me flowers and herb teas and books I could never quite get myself to read. At the end of January, he sat in the dark with me for 8 straight nights, watching Roots. I ached to tell him how I felt, but how I felt was all tangled up in other babies. My brother Anthony Jr., and Rita Spite's baby, and my own fetal self in the pool at Gracewood. Secrets were the way to go with Dante, I was absolutely sure. The one secret I had let him in on, "Dante, I'm pregnant," had lost me Vita Marie. Somewhere during that time, he wrote a new poem about a woman who shrank her husband and put him in a birdcage. "What's this supposed to mean?" I asked him. "It's allegorical. I guess I'm trying to say I feel diminished." "Not as diminished as Vita Marie," I thought. But to his face, all I said was that he'd promised to be patient with me. "I have been patient," he said. "But I'm getting goddamn sick of this pity party every night." I put my hands over my wet face. "I can't help it, Dante. She was growing inside me. I even named her." "Named it," he said. "Not her, it. Why are you doing this to us?" "I'm sorry. I know I've been awful. I'm going to try to be better." He rubbed my back to stop the shaking. When he pulled up my sweatshirt and licked at my nipples, I managed not to scream. Later, between his orgasm and his falling asleep, he murmured, "You see? You see how good getting on with our life makes you feel?" "Uh-huh," I said. "Get some sleep." I had managed not to tell him her name. After that night, I kept my grief a secret too, focusing as best I could on my new role, bride-to-be. His parents arrived in their Winnebago 2 mornings before the wedding. Dante and his father hefted our present, a Lazy Boy recliner, out of the camper and into the middle of our apartment where it sat, parked like a Buick. I avoided sitting in it. It reminded me of the recliner in Dr. Shaw's office where I'd had to sit and tell the truth. The Davises were a ruddy meat-and-potatoes couple who wore his and hers nylon jackets and gave no clue that their marriage had once been plagued by Mr. Davis's womanizing. Dante looked like his mother, not his father, which somehow relieved me. Mrs. Davis kept smiling hard at me, flashing her gold bridge work and stretching her shiny vinyl cheeks. She told Dante I was an absolute jewel, and reminded him what an excellent judge of character she had always been.
Dante's parents called him Chipper. Geneva Sweet had sent us Lennox dishes and her regrets, so the only wedding guests on my side were Grandma and two of the checkout girls from Grand Union. I'd invited Grandma over the phone, reminding her not to mention anything about Gracewood or my fat days. Despite her initial grumblings about a justice of the peace service not being a true wedding in God's eyes or hers, she got herself on a Trailways bus in Providence and arrived in town the afternoon before the ceremony. She looked pale and fragile as she clasped the bus driver's hand and allowed him to lead her down the steps, and I wondered for a second if she'd somehow found out about my abortion, if the disclosure had withered her. Easing down into the front seat of Dante's Volkswagen, she said it was the first time she'd ever been to Vermont, and now the first time she'd ever ridden in a soup can. The trip up had shaken her. To start with, a crazy woman in a filthy coat had sat next to her on the bench during a stopover in Willimantic, Connecticut, and accused Grandma of having, years before, stolen her umbrella. Then, in Springfield, Massachusetts, a slew of colored people had gotten on, all of them wearing those big balloon hairstyles, so that she couldn't see a thing around her. "They're called naturals, Mrs. Holland," Dante smiled. "Hair bigger than your head? You called that natural? Jeez." The young colored man who sat right plop down next to her wore clothing so bright it gave Grandma a headache. I told him right off the bat, I said, "Listen here. If you try to take this purse, I'll put up a fight no matter how little's in there." Of course, I probably wouldn't have. The bus driver was a colored, too. Told him that to call his bluff, see? Grandma said her seatmate told her he had rechristened himself with the name Love and had founded a new religion based on, of all things, forgiveness. Turning the other cheek. Turning the other cheek hadn't helped Grandma, though. He kept talking whether she looked at him or not. She'd had to listen to his malarkey all the way to White River Junction. Because of her ordeal, Grandma felt justified, she told Dante's parents, in saying yes to the glass of cranberry liqueur they offered her, though she wasn't a drinker and never had been. The alcohol and attention bewitched her. Within half an hour, she was so charmed and spirited that she'd begun to tell stories from her childhood. How her older brother Bill had run away to join the Navy and sent her a pet monkey from Madagascar, which had arrived precisely on her birthday, except dead. How a rooster had had it in for her and chased her all the way down to the Preston Bridge on her way to fourth grade. Her father later paid the owner 75 cents for the pleasure of wringing its neck. They had it for Sunday dinner, and it was tough as shoe leather. "Your little granny's as cute as a bug in a rug," Mrs. Davis told me, squeezing my arm. I sipped the liqueur, too, hoping it would make me as light-hearted as the rest of them. It put me in a slump instead, and I sat and watched Grandma, trying to read from her face if she could ever forgive abortion. "I think I'm acquiring a taste for the old gal," Dante whispered about Grandma during the dishes that night. She and Dante's parents were in front of the TV, watching the Jeffersons. "She's got a certain feisty charm for a racist, not to mention all those great dead animal stories." At 10 o'clock, Dante returned to his apartment, and his parents went back to their room at the Brown Derby Motel. I was making up the sheets when Grandma came out of the bathroom in her housecoat and slippers and gave me 2 wedding presents, a cameo locket on a delicate gold chain, and $2,200 cash. $2,200 bills. "Grandma," I said, "we can't accept this much money, and you should never have been carrying this cash with you all the way up here." She wanted to talk about the locket instead. She suggested I might like to wear it during the ceremony. "Your grandfather gave it to me on our 2nd wedding anniversary. I can still see the wrapping paper it came in.
course, I gave him the rats for spending the money. Grouchy Gertie, he used to call me. I was the serious one, you know. He was always full of the dickens. I reached over and kissed the soft creases in her cheek. "It's beautiful," I said. "Thank you for coming all this way." She shooed away the kiss, a distraction. "Grouchy Gertie," she said softly. I'd forgotten that. Later in the dark, we lay side by side together, not sleeping. "Grandma," I said. "I wish Ma could be alive right now, here with us, here for my wedding. I never told you this, Grandma, but one of the things I had to work on when I was at the hospital was my feelings about Ma, her death, and the breakdown she had, and the fact that she and Jack had been before he did what he did to me." She reached over and touched my wrist. Neither of us spoke for the next several minutes. "I was just thinking," she finally said. "Maybe that colored fella really wasn't such a big kook. The one who sat next to me on the bus. Him and his forgiveness religion. I didn't realize you knew about that business that was going on between them, Dolores. Your mother and that one upstairs. Spite. I knew, of course. She was never a very good liar around me. One night, right in the middle of it, I surprised her at the back door. Sat on a kitchen chair in the dark until she came downstairs. She was on her way up there, see, sneaking up to see him while little Rita was at work. You were fast asleep, of course. 'He's a married man,' I told her. 'You walk out this door, young lady, and I'll never forgive you.' That's what I said to her. 'I'll never forgive you.' I was scared for her, you see. Thought to myself, she'll burn in hell for a month of Sundays because of what she's doing. But she went anyway. Poor thing. Couldn't help herself. She always had a certain weakness, even as a girl. All those asthma attacks." "Sometimes," I said, "sometimes I love Dante so much that it scares me. I feel out of control. Is that normal?" "Of course it's normal. I was scared skinny when I married Ernest. Didn't know what the deuce to expect beyond cooking and keeping a house." "Do you think it's wrong that I never told Dante about the hospital, or Jack, or anything?" "No," she said. "It's for the best. Men scare too easily. And all that business happened a long time ago, anyway. It makes me sad, though."
"What does?"
"Oh, that Bernice couldn't be alive for your wedding. That she never heard me say I forgave her." She was hesitating in the dark. I could tell she wasn't through yet.
"What is it, Grandma?"
"Well, I can't get that cuckoo bus trip out of my mind, that's all. At one point, I got up out of my seat, stood up to get something from the rack overhead. A tangerine, it was. I'd packed a tangerine and some fig Newtons, you see, so my stomach wouldn't be empty when I took my pill. Then we went over a bump, and I lost my balance. Went to steady myself, and my hand landed in that hair of his. Well, I apologized, of course. It was very embarrassing. My hand disappeared right up to the wrist. He was very nice about it, really. Took out this funny comb he had and said he was just glad I didn't fall. But the funny part, the part I was just lying here thinking about, was what that hair felt like."
"What did it feel like, Grandma?"
"Well, I always imagined their hair would be bristly.
You know, steely, like SOS. But it doesn't feel like that at all. I mean, it's stiff, yes. Of course it's stiff. But it's soft, too. That's the part that surprised me. The softness.